Please welcome to the stage, Don Lemon.
The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath in the lungs of democracy. I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Same-gender couples get property rights in the Philippines, UK trans people can use toilets anywhere except work, and trumped-up charges plague gay journalist Don Lemon. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Cohabitating same-gender couples in the Philippines can now be recognized as joint owners of property that they acquired during their relationship. The February 5th ruling by the Supreme Court has seemingly moved the Southeast Asian Islands nation one step closer to marriage equality. Two women had purchased a house and lot together during their relationship. The property in the Manila suburb Quezon City was only registered under one partner's name. When they split up, the unregistered partner wanted to partition the property or sell it. She produced a document signed by her ex confirming that she had paid about half of the purchase price for the property and its renovation costs. The registered partner first agreed, then rejected the document and broke the deal. So the unregistered partner filed a complaint. The Philippines Family Code defines civil marriage as a special contract of permanent union between a man and a woman. Because they're denied civil marriage in the predominantly Roman Catholic country, the court concluded that property questions involving same-gender couples are governed by Article 148 of the Code, which covers unmarried cohabitation. That provision makes the properties acquired by both of the parties through their actual joint contribution of money, property, or industry owned by them in common in portion to their respective contributions. The Supreme Court reversed lower courts that had rejected the unregistered partner's claim. It found that the signed acknowledgement was sufficient proof of her actual contributions to the property under Article 148, and that she is therefore entitled to demand its partition. The High Court issued a press release soon after the ruling was announced, calling on the government to address same-sex couples' rights, as courts alone cannot resolve all related policy concerns.
Trans people in the United Kingdom can use bathrooms and changing rooms that match their gender identity, except in the workplace. That's the result of a February 13th Supreme Court ruling that grows out of last year's somewhat convoluted decision that trans women are not legally women under the Equality Act, but are nevertheless protected from discrimination. Now, the Trans Solidarity Alliance says the situation for trans people, employers, and service providers is completely incoherent. In this week's ruling, the justices decided that employers must provide separate bathrooms based on the worker's gender assigned at birth. That specifically denies trans employees access to bathrooms that match their gender identity. However, trans customers of the same establishments may be allowed to use gender-appropriate bathrooms. One justice told The Independent that service providers ranging from restaurants and bars to hospitals and government facilities should be guided by common sense and benevolence that is not blinkered by unyielding ideologies. The justices added in their ruling that employers are allowed to provide gender-neutral bathrooms for use by all staff, including trans employees. Without such accommodations, the organization Trans Solidarity points out that trans workers would not be able to do their jobs. They underscore the perplexity, saying, "What bathroom a trans person can use in a pub may now depend on whether they are there as an employee or for a drink."
Public school officials in the UK are being directed to notify parents if their child's behavior suggests that they are questioning their gender identity. Legally binding guidance issued on February 12th by the Department of Education also instructs school staff to discourage students from socially transitioning and to exercise extreme caution using a trans student's chosen name or pronouns. Under the guidance, trans students must not be allowed to use campus bathrooms or changing rooms that match their gender identity. This is about pragmatic support for teachers, reassurance for parents, and above all, the safety and well-being of children and young people, according to Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson. The guidance stands firmly on last year's much-criticized CAS review. That's a study that condemns the availability of puberty blockers and hormone therapies for trans young people. It led the government to ban their use in most cases. Cal Horton believes that the new guidance will do more harm than good for trans young people. Horton is a research fellow at the Oxford Brookes Business School, specializing in trans issues. Their analysis echoes that of several other critics. In Horton's words, trans children need to be supported and respected in order to be safe at school, in order to access their right to education, in order to enjoy their childhood. Instead, we are seeing a complete ban on access to appropriate toilets, PE, accommodation on school trips, a complete erosion of their rights. Horton concludes, it will lead to children avoiding the bathroom, avoiding exercise, missing out on school trips, dropping out of school, and losing any hope of education, equality, friendship, or happiness.
It's the third strike for New Hampshire's trans student bathroom ban. Republican Governor Kelly Ayotte has for the second time vetoed a bill to require trans students to use sex-segregated school bathrooms and changing facilities that match their gender assigned at birth. Republican Governor Chris Sununu vetoed a similar bill the year before. In her 2025 veto message, Ayotte complained that the measure was overly broad and impractical to enforce, potentially creating an exclusionary environment for some of our citizens. The Republican-controlled legislature failed to secure a two-thirds majority vote needed to override Ayotte's veto last December. Observers believe an override will fail again. Amy Terevetria of the statewide LGBTQ group 603 Equality applauded Governor Ayotte's veto, proclaiming, "Bathroom bans simply have no place in New Hampshire." In Terevetria's words, in a time of unrelenting legislative attacks and misinformation campaigns around transgender people and their rights, transgender and gender nonconforming people deserve safe access to public spaces as they go about living, working, and contributing to our communities.
Finally, embattled U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's fiery five-hour joust with minority Democrats culminated in an explosive confrontation with Vermont's lesbian Congressmember Becca Ballant. The February 11th hearing before the House Judiciary Committee focused on the Justice Department's failure to release all of the files related to the late convicted child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Both congressional chambers overwhelmingly approved opening the files, and the law was signed by Bondi's boss, President Donald Trump. Bondi reprised her belligerent performance before a Senate committee late last year, evading relevant questions while rifling through a binder of misleading information to use against Democratic committee members. Near the end of the hearing, Bondi attempted to deflect Ballant's examination by referring to a 2024 House resolution condemning the phrase, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Ballant joined more than 40 other Democrats voting against it and called the measure yet another way to sow division and demonize Palestinians, according to the Jewish News Syndicate. When Ballant asked if the Justice Department had seriously investigated powerful officials whose names appear in the Epstein files, Bondi's evasion enraged Ballant.
"I want the record to reflect that, you know, with this anti-Semitic culture right now, she voted against a resolution condemning
is Jewish.
Oh, I just want to be clear.
Oh, do you want to go there, Attorney General? Or do you want to go there? Are you serious
to the gentleman
talking
from
about
South
anti-Semitism
Carolina.
To a woman who lost her grandfather in the Holocaust?
I reclaim my time.
Really?
I reclaim my time.
Really?
As some of her Democratic committee colleagues came to her defense, Balint stormed out of the chamber. She returned to sit with the Epstein survivors. Bondi just snickered.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
This week, we honor the February birthday of Anais Nin.
As June walked towards me from the darkness of the garden into the light of the door, I saw for the first time the most beautiful woman on earth. A startlingly white face, burning dark eyes, a face so alive I felt it would consume itself before my eyes.
Anais Nin is considered an important figure in LGBTQ plus and feminist history, not necessarily because she identified strongly as a lesbian, but because she was a pioneer in advocating for sexual freedom, bisexuality, and women's sexual agency without shame.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 1982, Wisconsin becomes the first state in the nation to make it unlawful for private businesses to discriminate based on sexual orientation in employment and housing. And in 2017, Moonlight becomes the first LGBT film to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The U.S. Constitution's First Amendment free press rights clashed with its First Amendment freedom of religion when a gay African-American journalist was arrested. But was U.S. President Donald Trump's personal antipathy towards Don Lemon the real reason behind the charges? Federal judges have rejected the case concerning the former CNN host's coverage of a January 18th protest that breached a Minneapolis church whose pastor doubles as an immigration enforcement agent. Failing that, Attorney General Pam Bondi tweeted that she herself had directed the arrest. Lemon was in a Beverly Hills hotel on his way to cover the Grammy Awards when he was detained on January 29th by more than two dozen Homeland Security and FBI agents. He made a surprise appearance at the Human Rights Campaign's New York Gala on February 7th.
Hi, everyone. How are you? How was your week? Oh, let me tell you. All of those jailhouse scenes you see in certain movies, no, not that cute. Thank you guys for everything. Thank you for your support. Good evening. Good evening, family. How are you? Can I have a few minutes of your time? Because this is the only thing, I did Jimmy Kimmel and I'm doing this. Because this is really important. Because the freedom to live in America and be who you want, love who you want, it's a human right, right? The freedom of the press. in this country is a human right. So for me, tonight feels less like a gala that you guys are here, and it feels more like a gathering, just sort of hanging out, a gathering of people who still believe that truth matters, right? Dignity is not optional. Freedom is not guaranteed. We've seen that in this time. This past week reminded me of something that I thought that I understood. The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath in the lungs of democracy. It is the bedrock of our democracy. And when that breath is threatened, all of us can feel it before you can even explain it. Do you know that saying, I can't breathe? Our society cannot breathe without the freedom of the press, the freedom of speech. So last week, I felt it. I felt the smothering, the suffocation. I saw how quickly that a voice can be targeted, how easily truth can be distorted. Don't pay attention to the noise, people. Do not. I saw how fast a story can be turned into a warning. But I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of that witness. To tell, you can applaud if you want. It is to tell. I feel so comfortable here, I could just, hang out. It's to tell the truth as clearly as I can. With clarity comes consequences. You guys know that, right? You saw what happened to me. There is a passage in the scripture that says, the truth shall set you free, or depending on which church or which Bible or which rendition of the Bible, or King James or whatever, it'll say the truth shall make you free. But it doesn't say that the truth will make you safe. It does not say that it will make the powerful comfortable. That's not part of the promise. It does not say that it's going to spare you from the cost of seeing too clearly. And I think most times as members of the LGBTQ plus community, we see things a lot clearer than most people. And right now, that cost of the truth is rising, like the price of eggs and everything else in this country. We are watching an administration right now that treats the Constitution not as a covenant, but as an inconvenience that they don't have to abide by. This is inconvenient, and this is getting in our way. It's authoritarianism. And we need to be careful, because the very little that's left of our democracy can be gone in a second, if it's not too late already. We're watching leaders who speak of law and order while trampling on the very laws that restrain power, picking up people on the streets without due process. We are watching the Bill of Rights praised in speeches and ignored in practice. The First Amendment especially has become a target to this administration. Reporters are attacked as enemies, enemies of the people. How long have you been hearing that? 10 years now, since Donald Trump has been in office. Facts are dismissed as disloyalty. Questions are treated as threats. And here's a truth that is harder to say. The most dangerous thing to any authority is not rebellion. I go back to that word. It is witness. It is, they're afraid of the pen, the cameras, the witness. It's not outrage, but it's evidence. Witnessing is evidence. It's not noise, but truth spoken clearly. America loves the idea of a free press. We like to say, freedom press, freedom of speech, yeah, we're free. Like to recite it like a hymn, celebrates it as if it's a tradition, invokes it as if it is a slogan. But the press is only welcome when it does not disturb comfort. That's what power does. It doesn't want their comfort disturbed. When it does not expose the power would rather conceal. What power would rather conceal? That's when it is welcome. The free press does not exist to reassure the nation. It exists to reveal it to itself. The free press is a mirror to a society. It's where we test our ideas. It's where we test our democracy. We have seen what happens when that revelation is punished. We have seen journalists arrested while covering protests. We have seen reporters threatened for investigating corruption and violation. We have seen books removed from schools because they told inconvenient truths about race, gender, and sexuality. What is that? And we have seen journalists singled out, smeared, and targeted simply for doing their jobs. You guys know who James Baldwin is, right? My literary hero. He understood that clarity carries consequences. Of course you know who Dr. King is. He knew that truth invites punishment. And generations before us understood that when truth threatens power, power will respond. And it won't always be nice. Most of the times, it is not nice. I would say all of the time. So last week, I felt the weight of that truth in a very, very personal way. Can you imagine the state having control of your freedom simply because they don't like that you are doing your job? So that was very frightening to me. But in my time when I was there, I thought about all the people who'd come before me. I thought about all of the people who fought for civil rights, who fought for gay rights, all of the people who were at Stonewall, Marsha P. Clark. I'm like, yes, those are the people, those are the real heroes. And so what's happening to me, I have at least in this time that I'm living now, more agency, more resources, more rights, and I would hope, than the people who were fighting for our freedom and our civil rights. But I also felt something else. I felt the quiet courage of colleagues who refused to be intimidated. When I walked out, I was surprised by the statements that people had made, by the support that I had. I felt the solidarity of people who understood that this moment was bigger than one story, one journalist, one controversy. Because when a society punishes journalists, it is not punishing a profession. What it's punishing is reality. When reporters are silenced, citizens are blinded. When truth is criminalized, freedom becomes fragile. When the First Amendment becomes optional, democracy becomes hollow. There is an old spiritual that says, does anybody go to the black church here, anybody? Anybody? Anybody know that old spiritual that said, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Gonna keep on a-walking, keep on a-talking, marching on to freedom land. And that's what we're doing. That song was never loud. It was never loud for the sake of noise. It was steady. It was stubborn. It was unyielding. And that's what a free press must be in this time. Not, you don't have to be theatrical. You don't have to be reckless, but unwilling to be turned around, unwilling to give false equivalency, unwilling to give people a platform who simply want to lie and obfuscate and demean people who are not in power, especially people of color and people of LGBTQ folks. So I stand here tonight, not as a victim of a difficult week, but as a witness to a larger truth. Freedom is fragile, but it's not finished. I should add a word to that when I was writing this. Freedom is fragile, but it is not finished yet, because it can be. Truth is contested, but it is not defeated yet. Democracy is strained, but it is not silent yet, right? We got to keep fighting. A free press is not only holy because journalists are perfect, it is holy because it is one of the few places where power can still be questioned, where stories can still be told, where the voiceless can still be heard. And the LGBTQ plus community knows this very deeply and personally. Every right that exists today, it exists because someone refused to be silent. Because someone told the truth when silence would have been safer. Comfort is a poison. Everyone is so used to being comfortable right now. They're not used to sacrificing anything. We have grown so comfortable. We have everything right in the palms of our hands. We have a computer that we carry around every day that can get us all the information that we ever need. And you have your own network in your pocket. But we have become really comfortable. We got to be careful, because that comfort will be the end of our democracy and the end of our rights. All of those things, all of the rights that we have today, as I say, yet, because someone insisted on being seen. So tonight in this room, I see people who have chosen to insist. This is an organization that has chosen to insist. So I am not here to retreat. I am not going to retreat. I am not here to dramatize. I am here to testify in the way that journalists testify, by saying plainly that truth matters, witness matters, and silence has never been neutral. And as long as there are people willing to speak, as long as there are journalists willing to observe and tell a story, as long as there are communities willing to defend dignity, the light is still on. It has not gone out yet. And if the light is still on, the darkness has not won. So thank you for carrying that light, and thank you for your courage, and thank you for letting me bear witness with you tonight. Have a great evening, everybody.
A week after his human rights campaign speech, independent journalist Don Lemon appeared in court on February 13th, along with Minneapolis reporter Georgia Fort and others in the church protest case. All pleaded not guilty to two federal crimes: conspiring to violate someone's constitutional rights and violating the FACE Act, which ironically began as a law to protect women's health clinics. Lemon spoke to the press after the court proceedings.
People are finally realizing what this administration is all about. The process is the punishment with them. And like all of you here in Minnesota, the great people of Minnesota, I will not be intimidated. I will not back down. I will fight these baseless charges, and I will not be silenced.
Black gay journalist Don Lemon's attorneys say that they will fight the case on constitutional grounds. He has the support of the International Women's Media Foundation, the National Association of Black Journalists, and NLGJA, the Association of LGBTQ Plus Journalists. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced by her co-host Brian DeShazer. Thanks to the Human Rights Campaign for sharing Don Lemon's speech at their New York City gala. Seals and Crofts and Sweet Honey and the Rock performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.